Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow.
Gary Breen is with us now, returning to football. Gary, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm really well, thank you.
We're going to start with yesterday's games first, because there was plenty to get stuck into. I might start with the bad news from the perspective of you two, who are both Arsenal fans. What's going on? I thought a new Arsenal had been born 5 or 6 weeks into the season. We were all, oh, Arteta, what a genius. So they're spending money in the transfer window, and they've got good signings. And then here we are, and they're abject.
It's so concerning, it really is. I haven't seen them in detail over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Obviously, caught the game yesterday. But when you're looking from a distance and not able to see them, like going to the games and commentating on them, you're wondering what exactly happening. And then you listen to what the supporters are saying. You see the game yesterday, and it looks like the old problems are rearing their ugly heads again. Arteta initially comes in, identifies that he has to address the defensive vulnerabilities, even with the players that he has there. He brings in Gabriel. And you're thinking, OK, that's great. But the problem is that the offset has been too great in that, in doing so, it looks like they've lost all their attacking verve. They're struggling for goals. If you're in the last 6 games now, it's only 2 goals scored. One's a penalty, one's from a corner. And this is the biggest worry. And of course, you see last night and all those defensive problems that you hope were behind you are back again. And I mean, I'm looking at the situation with David Luiz. You know, maybe the bang on the head has affected him, but just the decision-making, certainly for that first goal where he runs with a centre-forward to that near post, leaving that area for Dendonka then to attack when his centre-half partner had that run already. So it's a real worry. I think Arsenal fans are looking at the situation now. They're probably thinking it's their worst start in their Premier League history. The lack of goals, just 10 goals. But more concerning is that Arteta's been there now for that whole year. And it's the constant changing to the selections that he doesn't seem to have found the balance right. I think he's umming and ahhing about what he's going to do in midfield. There's times when he has the athleticism of Elneny in there to kind of counter the fact that Xhaka, Ceballos are not great athletes. But in doing so, then you lose their technical ability. So he's still trying to find that perfect balance. And it looks bad for Arsenal at the moment.
Just on the Luiz head injury, which you mentioned there, It was a pretty horrifying clash between himself and Jimenez. And obviously, David Luiz goes off at half time. Mikel Arteta says that he was properly treated at the time. There was the assessment done by medical professionals at the time, and everything was passed. We should put that on the record. But this morning, Troy Deeney's after saying on TalkSport that players should be trusted to make a decision for themselves on this. What's your opinion on those comments, and indeed the fact that Luiz, I guess, had to come off eventually at halftime yesterday?
Well, I didn't see Troy Deeney's comments, but I know what the scenario is with David Luiz. He wants to stay on. I've done it so many times myself, but you have to take that decision away from the player, because the player's always going to, the majority of players are going to say, I'm all right, put me back out there, no problems. Their focus is solely on the game. The concern for me, and certainly in terms of going back onto the pitch with a head injury like that, listen, I have no doubt in terms of the quality of Arsenal's backroom staff, because apparently they come from a rugby background. Apparently they've been in around the Irish rugby team, even that those guys who make that decision. So they'll know about head injuries from rugby union. But I think you have to take the decision away from the player. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You have to do that, because the player will always look to go back on. And I think this is the concern, is that the injury, you might have to blow initially and it's a cut and you think you can carry on. But it's 10, 15 minutes afterwards where the impact really starts to affect you. Matt Perry is the club doctor at Wolves. I know that Jimenez was out, so there was no decision to make. But I've actually, when I played for Wolves, Matt Perry was the doctor there. I had a similar situation at Sheffield Wednesday. I had to blow a couple of blows on the head. My head was cut open. I carried on. But at half time then, I kind of lost my bearings and decision was made for me. To my frustration, to my anger at the time, but the decision was made for me. And I think you have to do that. I think I don't understand what Troy Deeney's trying to say there, that players, you know, make the decision. If you've had a blow to the head, how can you actually make a good decision, because you're struggling at the time. So no, I don't believe that's the case.
Should football be bringing in a concussion sub? Because there's definitely that part of the element as well where maybe, I'm not talking about last night, but maybe there could be a situation where you don't want to use up a substitute. Famously, it's been a debate over the last couple of days that you've only got three subs in the Premier League. Should you be allowed to make a sub for a concussion? Take as long as you want, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, if you want, to ensure that your head injury assessment can be completed and you are fully safe to resume.
Yeah, listen, Owen, in terms of looking at that with hindsight, yeah, I think that would be a good addition. The problem you'll have, and you know what football managements are like, is that they'll be creative around it, trying to use it. I think you can prove that it is just a concussion injury, so you make that decision. So I think, yeah, going forward, it is probably a good idea, whether or not... The concern for me is that the people who are going to make these decisions and people who do all the kind of research are talking about doing it over the coming year. Well, listen, this is something, you know, just get the decision made. I don't understand why it's taking so long, talking about research. I think you can quite clearly see that if a player takes a blow to the head, then you should, for his welfare, be looking to make the decision for him, and you should be looking to take him off that pitch.
Yeah, that makes the perfect sense, right? So we actually had a comment earlier on. So Cody says, we saw several head injuries yesterday, but by far the worst part was seeing a player remain on the field after a horrific clash of heads in the Arsenal game, which led to a player in hospital. Football needs to really wake up to head injuries in their practices. And it's actually a fairly similar, it's part of the pie of the conversation we've been having over the last number of years about head injuries and heading the ball and ultimately dementia. This is just a very clear, football doesn't really understand how to deal with this just yet. They should learn from rugby and see that the difficulties that took rugby a long time to get to grips with this. Football's still kind of like, well, you know, we don't really need to get to grips with it, but they do. And the players' union, again, I would say, need to be very strong, saying, okay, hang on a second, what's going on? What can we do to influence this?
No, absolutely. I think that it's been well documented now that, say, for example, the PFA, they've been heavily criticised in terms of caring for those players who potentially might suffer for it, and obviously putting in protocols for the ones playing football now and even the younger generations to make sure that they're not as vulnerable to that scenario. But you're right. I think these decisions need to be made very quickly now, Gerd. That these can't drag on. You know, the impact is too big. And I think certainly when players get those type of injuries, you have to make the decision for them. I was asked by John Duggan on the Saturday afternoon show, did I ever, in a game where I had a blow to the head, and the only one I can vividly remember, really, obviously I've taken loads of blows to the game, but where it really affected me was when I was playing for Ireland away to Switzerland. We lost the game 2-0. I took a blow and I have no recollection. And after the game, I had no recollection for the last half an hour of that game. Now, that's not to say that the coaching staff or the medical staff, I should say, sorry, with the Irish team were negligent. Of course they weren't, because I'm convincing them, nope, I'm fine. And actually, I don't even think they knew that I'd had a blow to the head. So this is the problem that you have. I just genuinely think that this is something that's just so prevalent right now, and it really needs to be addressed. The right protocols need to be put in place, because the other sports in world, all over the world, are putting football to shame in terms of the protocols that they now have in place, even the likes of cricket.
Mm. Yeah, without question. That has been the big talking point last night. I'm sure the Arsenal malaise in terms of their form will go on, and we'll come back to that in a while. We should talk a little bit about Spurs against Chelsea, though, yesterday, Gary. And yeah. I guess a lot of people, a lot of Spurs fans, a lot of Chelsea fans will be pretty confident in their own title challenge abilities over the next little while. But I don't know, is there a sense yesterday that this game was there for the taking? I mean, Spurs had a second half XG of 0.00 yesterday. They created nothing. A little bit more bravery and you'd be sitting top of the table with a bit of a points cushion on Liverpool.
Yeah, but we talk about the lack of chances for a moment, but all Mourinho will be cared of is that there's a point, another point on the board. And I'm looking at, and obviously we're talking about Arsenal's problems. It's compounded by the fact that Spurs are up at the top of the league. But you're looking at Tottenham now, and in this strange season, you're looking at in terms of what Mourinho has done in 18 months, and for them to be title challenging and have an opportunity, people say, and he's saying they're a pony in this horse race for the title, but they're not. He's cute enough. And if you're looking at someone who, bearing in mind, he's got that offensive threat of the likes of Kane, Son, Bale, when he hopefully comes back, and then you align that to the fact that they're so compact, so resolute, that they've conceded the fewest goals in the Premier League this season. They have that kind of knowing that Mourinho brings. I mean, I wax lyrical about that Tottenham team under Pochettino, and quite often to stick to beat him with was the fact that he had had no silverware, won nothing. And he came out with a quote which surprised me towards the end of his tenure, that winning trophies only builds egos. Yeah, it does, because egos are what you need to win titles. And if you think about the biggest ego in football, it's Mourinho. And there's a know-how. I know people will look at them and think they're short in terms of their strength in depth, that if there were any of the likes of Son or Kane were to get injured, they'll struggle. And then also, despite those brilliant defensive numbers, that's not a back four that individually would impress you that much. But the setup in terms of what the likes of Sissoko and especially Højbjerg have brought is brilliant in terms of out of possession. That back four quickly becomes a back six, even though they're not playing five at the back. And they just literally say, well, it's a back six. We'll keep us in the game and we'll counter-attack at pace. We have that real quality in Kane and Son who can get you a goal out of nothing. So, I don't know. I'm looking at them now. Obviously, they've now took 4 points in games against Chelsea, Man City. They've gone to Manchester United and battered them. But I'm sure the games coming up now with Leicester, Liverpool will really test them. So, I don't know. For any Arsenal fans out there, it's a worrying time.
Yeah, definitely. It was like that moment there a couple of weeks ago when it looked like Cork might do the double, but thankfully that was swiftly dispensed.
Oh, yeah. that felt better than not winning amongst the title.
The one thing about Spurs and going about it in this way is that it might actually be the season where a team that is defensively sound will actually go on and win the title. I mean, we were judging Spurs by the Manchester City and Liverpool standards of the past three seasons. Different standards apply this year.
Yeah, they do. Listen, it's such a difficult year to predict, isn't it? It really is. But even the work that Mourinho has done with Ndombele in terms of, like, you know, making him the player. I know he didn't play particularly well yesterday, but he's been a great asset for them at midfield. He's got real power. He really has that ability to get out of tight situations, just bumps players away and runs away with pace. But he's now got that type of energy, work rate, aligned to that type of skill that you have to have, really, to play in a Mourinho team. And certainly that work that Mourinho done in the lockdown in and around Hadley Wood, which is an area around Tottenham, a residential area, and there's a big green there, and he was running him every day there, wasn't he? Which for anyone who's living in that area must have been so surprised, just driving past and seeing the work being done. But it looks like it's had a real impact.
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, this is an underrated part of the whole lockdown thing, is Mourinho and Spurs kept getting their photographs taken. Oh, sorry. But it clearly worked.
Exactly. I mean, in terms of what's happening this season, the fact that no football teams and the managers can't have their usual pre-season, everyone's going to have to really think on their feet and show their qualities that way. I think it's caught out a few managers, but the ones who are that the real clever, proactive and stuff, listen, Mourinho being one of them. And we initially looked at that first game of the season against Everton and thought, poor, they said they're going to struggle. You heard the natives at Tottenham, the fans literally saying, well, we're not happy with Mourinho, blah, blah, blah. But they weren't ready. They went up to speed. Now they're looking like they are. And this is the reason why they're up there at the top of the table and putting themselves in a great position in what is going to be and has been so far a very, very difficult season to predict.
The post-match Jurgen Klopp interview with Des Kelly from BT Sports.
Brilliant. It was brilliant.
I mean, it was weird in that, like, I didn't feel like either of them were being... Normally with one of these things, somebody's always just being complete... Whatever. He kind of felt like Klopp is angry, he's making the wrong point, and then he's making some good points, and then he's like, changed the subject away from the other thing. And Des Kelly's like, no, I'm sorry, hang on a second.
Yeah.
He almost lost it at one point as well. There was one bit where he was like, oh, did he nearly say something? He nearly did say something there. But what does it all mean? I don't know. I can't tell.
Well, I think ultimately... It's another reflection of what's happened this season, that it's no pre-season, the fact that these players had a short turnaround after such a long break. So physically, these players are going to be challenged. There's no question in that. And the sports scientists will produce those stats in terms of the injuries, the figures are up. And we understand that. Of course we do. These are exceptional times. But my only issue with the big... debate about the amounts of subs and the fact that it's being led by Jurgen Klopp, who I'm a massive fan of. I have been since that very first press conference at Liverpool where I just bought into him straight away. I think he's a brilliant manager. I genuinely do. But what I don't, my only concern I have with Jurgen Klopp, and to a certain extent is Pep Guardiola, is that they come into the Premier League and they want to change it dramatically. The Premier League is an endurance-based league. And the fact that those two managers were in absolute shock at the fact that when their leagues that they've come from have a break around the Christmas time, when it gets tough, we actually play more games. We squeeze in as many more games as we can. And I love that about the Premier League because, yes, I love the technical ability. I want to see players at their very best. But I also want to see the physical challenge of it. I want to see that these players have to cope with the demands, how, who does it better than others. And I just feel that he's always banging the drum about that. He has ever since he's come in. I understand that this more than any season, and the reason why he wants those five subs. But to actually come out and name Chris Wilder as one of the managers who doesn't want it, I didn't like that. That didn't sit well with me.
I think he is selfish. How well has that worked out for him? I think he has no wins and one goal or something. It was like, well,
It was uncomfortable that there was no need to name check anyone. It's Chris Wilder. He's struggling at the moment, but he's a brilliant manager. I've no doubt about that. But it's a tough one for them, Sheffield United, at the moment. They've struggled. They have done ever since we returned to the end of last season after the lockdown. They were in a great position and fell away, and they've struggled badly this season. But don't name check them.
No, James Milner, was that a hamstring? Congratulations. It's like, ooh, well, that's a bit. Yeah. What are you congratulating him for? Getting the diagnosis correct? Or like that you did it to him? Like,
but even, Jared, do you know when, like, these managers, obviously, you want their players at 100%. And that's unrealistic. Because if you're going to say that, then, all right, then cut it down to 20. Let's only play 20 games a season then, if you want them at their very best. Yeah. That's the challenge. And I think supporters find it difficult to say, well, hold on a minute. You're professional athletes. I understand the science. I genuinely do. But that going into the red zone in terms of the physical demands, that's what it's about. That's the challenge. Can you cope with it? And it's a leveler. And I think the likes of Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp keep saying, no, it has to be that every player is at 100%. Feels a little bit the way Wenger used to say, I don't want any more throw-ins. I want to play the perfect game and take on other teams in the perfect game. Doesn't work like that. The Premier League gives you a challenge that few other leagues in the world do, to be perfectly honest. And that's what I love about it.
And also, I think the fact that he just has seen his team concede a last-minute penalty that cost him 2 points. And ultimately, he's like, wow, I'm just going to get angry about a load of stuff and I don't know if it's going to all make sense.
Yeah. Listen, when you're in that bubble, it's so difficult. At any level of coaching, it really is. And certainly those post-match interviews when everything is so raw, is so fresh. They're brilliant for us to watch as viewers. And at times, we complain that they can be a bit monotonous, robotic, the managers just answering whatever. But when we actually get the real personality coming out, we love it.
Yeah.
We do. We love to see it.
Yeah. I'm happy.
Big win for Manchester United yesterday, Gary. Yeah. Ralph Hasenhüttl summed it up well. He said, you can hear them celebrating in their dressing room. You know what you have done today and how tough an opponent you have been, because they were celebrating like they had won the Premier League. There is nothing that rival fans would love better than reading that about Manchester United this morning. But how good was Edinson Cavani when he came off the bench yesterday? Could you talk us through his movement and how he made it look a lot easier than it really was to get them the winner yesterday?
I just thought he was fantastic. And obviously, he hasn't been at the levels to really start games as such. But just look at the cut of him, Owen. This guy's 33, but he looks like someone 5 or 6 years younger than that. And there was one moment in that game that really stood out for me in terms of people saying, listen, he's coming towards the end of his career. And I know Manchester United are a bit wary of what happened with Schweinsteiger and Sanchez, that these guys come later on in their career and not that able to kind of produce. But if you think about that header that he got up and he just hung there, the one that just drifted past the far post, that's the type of spring that you can't do when you're coming towards the end of your career. That's the first thing that goes. People talk about your legs and stuff, but it's that spring. He gets up there, he hangs, and then has the ability then to... It was incredible. I thought, wow. And then you're looking about his movement and stuff like that. And the movement is, the thing that stands out for me, certainly as a centre-half, is that when he attacks that initial space, whether it's near post or far post, he attacks it with every bit of energy that he has. I was actually watching a documentary this weekend on the 1986 World Cup in terms of what Maradona done. But it showed a couple of the England games. And it showed Gary Lineker exactly the same. Those type of guys who give everything to get across the front of you or down the side of you. And when a centre forward commits in that way, as a centre half, it really, really panics you because you think, I've got to go with a run. So suddenly then you do that a couple of times, you go with that run, and as soon as they go a couple of yards, you go full out as a centre half and they pull away. You can't recover. It's that type of movement that makes it so difficult to mark. Harry Maguire is even commented post-match saying his movement's frightening. It's the best I've ever come across. And that's just in training. So you're seeing someone who commits to those runs in training, not alone in games. But I looked at that scenario and I said, as soon as he came on, I thought, oh, listen, United are going to get back into this. I could see it. I thought Vestergaard just looked absolutely out on his feet at centre-half. He struggled in the first half, didn't he, when he let that ball go through for Greenwood. All three goals are his fault as such because he goes in initially into midfield when he doesn't need to. Cavani then gets and plays a ball into Fernandes. There's only one centre-half in there. He scores a goal. He gives away the cheap free kick for the second goal. He's deep. But when people talk about movement as well, Owen and Jay, if you look at the first goal that Cavani gets, the ball goes out to Bruno Fernandes on the edge of the box. There's 9 Southampton players, 5 United players. Every one of them is standing still. The only one who's on the move on the strike from Bruno Fernandes is Cavani, and he gets his goal as a result of that. It was so brilliant to watch it on the screen that they all stood still watching and waiting to see where Fernandes' shot goes. He doesn't, gambles across the front. In fact, fights his way across one defender, knocks Van der Beek out of the way to get his goal. This guy's top-class centre-forward. And I'm looking at it now and thinking, I can understand where a lot of United fans and certainly critics of United were looking at it and thinking, because they're trying to build this now, that deal was something of real planning. It wasn't. It was a last-minute decision. But certainly they look like they've got a player who could contribute massively for the remainder of this season.
That's coachable. The way you've described that, that's like you can sit with somebody and say, when the ball is here, you need to start your movement.
Yeah, Jay, you can coach it. But I don't think you can do it with that intensity. I look at Martial and you know, you can coach it with him, but I don't see him breaking his neck to get across. I just don't see it. And not just him. I think a lot of top centre forwards. Listen, look at Arsenal yesterday. Look at with Aubameyang. I didn't see, and I think he's a world-class centre forward, but I didn't see him busting a gut to get across the front to get his goals. I certainly didn't see it with Tammy Abraham in terms of those crosses coming into the box, those brilliant wide crosses that he was on. Busting the gut to get across the front. And they're the two guys, Tammy Abraham, a young, brilliant centre-forward, Aubameyang, a top-class, experienced centre-forward. I still don't think they go with that real verve to get across the way that Cavani does.
Yeah, fair enough. OK, I do remember, I can't remember what the source of this was, but Kluivert saying that he had been told by Louis van Gaal to always make the near post run, always make the near post run. And so That was where a lot of his goals came from because he was always busting the gut to get there and do that. And that worked out okay for him.
Yeah. Well, listen, Clive, a brilliant player. We played in that qualifying when we got to the World Cup. I know we beat, we got a draw in Holland, beat him at home, but Clive was a fantastic player. I think when he came to the Premier League at Newcastle, I think his better days were behind him. Yeah. But I'm looking at that Manchester United result, and it's interesting to hear Hassan Hotel say that they're roaring and cheering their heads off in the United change room. But I tell you what, we'll hear all those spin. I haven't read the reports yet, but I'm not looking at that game thinking that was a tactical masterclass of getting back into that game. No way, not for one moment. I think it starts with that diamond in the first half. They look good to begin with. But as soon as they concede that first goal, Southampton get a foothold in the game. You play and decide to play a diamond in midfield, you're looking to control the game. Because otherwise, you're going to be so vulnerable in those wide positions. The setup was good, the diamond, I understand it. The very fact that you play Greenwood, Rashford as split strikers, that stops the fullbacks coming up, essentially. But the reality was, as soon as Southampton got a foothold in the game, Rashford and Greenwood having to do too much work defensively. And that diamond, I mean, Donny van der Beek, you're playing him on the left-hand side of a diamond, Fred on the right-hand side. It just doesn't look well. I know they're talking about they played well in the Champions League, but that's a different level to the challenge in terms of who they played in Istanbul to who you're playing against in the Premier League. Second half, it makes those tactical changes. Cavani comes on, gives you a focal point. But in terms of the setup, they then go to a 4-4-2. Van der Beek goes to right midfield, Fernandes to left. Then they go 4-2-3-1. To the end, the last 20 minutes, and credit to the players because they get themselves back into it. The players are running wherever they want. Van der Beek is in the left wing. And I'm looking at Southampton and thinking, guys, if you can just make that first pass, you're going to punish United because they've only got one Pasaka on that right-hand side defensively. But the problem is with Southampton, and we've seen it time and time again under Hassan Huttle, they come out of the blocks flying, but they can't last 90 minutes. No team's lost more points from winning positions than Southampton. And this is the concern. You look at them and they were on their feet. They were gone. And I think I'm looking at that and thinking, I know we're here and this is Manchester United way winning late games, but that was off the cuff towards the end, in my opinion. Right. And I don't think against the better teams they'll be able to do that.
Gary, great stuff. Thanks a million, man. Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Good luck.
OTB AM.
With Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.